6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. 6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You better run.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My name is Alex.
And I'm Sydney.
And I'm Kirk.
And you have entered the Lokiverse. This is a podcast dedicated to the Marvel show Loki. And folks, we are going to be starting with episode 1 and 2 for season 1 to do a little bit of a review to get you guys ready for the season premiere of season 2. And folks, how was doing a review of Loki? Did you read a little bit or did you read a lot of it?
I was the one who went back because I hadn't seen like Avengers in a decade. And so I watched like all of the Avengers and then a couple of the Loki films. And then at Kirk's, like, well, I asked him, but he suggested a couple of comics. So I was trying to figure out who this guy was.
She bought a whole forest worth of Loki books and comic books to get prepared for this. Kirk, on the other hand, he knows everything about, you know, the Lokiverse. So he's probably how long have you been reading comics?
Pretty much all my life. Probably started around 7-8 years old.
That's all?
I'm no way an Asgardian or Loki or even Thor expert.
Well, but you're the best that we got, so we're going with it, okay?
All you got. I'm all you got.
This is all we got.
Let's go.
This is all we got. No, but I say that because, you know, we're going to talk about all the episode, but I know, you know, Loki has a special place in a lot of people's hearts, and I have to say, in the beginning, before watching this show, yeah, I liked him, but you just learn to love this character.
I agree with you. I think that, you know, I think Loki was in the, has and always has been a, in the comics, a, you know, a particular villain or foil for Thor. That was pretty much his only purpose. And, you know, if you were really into Thor, you knew a lot about it. You liked the Loki character. He certainly, you know, interacted with other characters within the Marvel comic book universe. But he was in no way, you know, very much like Iron Man, right? Iron Man's the first big Marvel movie, right? Iron Man's like was a D-level hero in the comics, you know what
right.
I mean? And they took him to, you know, number one in the movies and obviously a lot more popular in the comics now than he ever was when I was growing up. Same is true for Loki, you know, and a lot of that is the three-dimensionality that they brought to him by putting him in film. Also, Tom Hiddleston's unbelievable portrayal.
He's a lot more handsome than the comic book version.
And they bring in, you know, he's complex, he's evil, but he has an arc that has, you know, that has all sorts of potential heroicism to it, heroics to it. So, yeah.
Well, before we get into all those details, the only way you can really start is with the plot episode. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of go through the synopsis and then have our little points in between. Because I really think this particular episode answers so many questions very quickly. Because we start at a place, which we're going to talk about in just a second. And when we end at that place, at the end of this episode, we're all caught up. I think maybe that's just my own take, but Kirk, why don't you start us off with the synopsis a little bit?
Okay. So first we're going to go through Glorious Purpose synopsis, which episode one, thanks to the Review Geek website for the following episode synopsis, which they do a lot of great work for that synopsis coverage, and it's a good resource. So definitely props to them. Episode one takes us back in time to 2012, and we see the moments following Loki escaping from the Avengers in Endgame. Loki finds himself in the Gobi Desert after grabbing the Tesseract, and doesn't take long before soldiers show up claiming to be part of the Time Variance Authority. They're here to arrest Loki. So the Tesseract is taken as well. Loki is thrown into an elevator with a four-armed robot. After disintegrating his clothes, Loki is taken down to sign documents confirming everything he's ever said. Well, this place is the Time Variance Authority, and their inception is all part of what was once a vast multiversal war. With different timelines battling for dominance, the timekeepers managed to stop all this with a sacred timeline. These variants are those who deviated from their original path, and the TVA are there to set time back where it should be. When we skip back in time to 1549 in France, TVA agents lay dead. A scared child points out to Mobius that the devil is responsible for what's befallen them. Loki brings up a lot of good points while standing on trial. While he's questioned about the sacred timeline, he brings up the Avengers and how they jumped back through time to distort the timeline. Apparently, the Avengers rewriting history was, quote, supposed to happen. Loki leaving the timeline, however, was not. And yet, if it wasn't for the Avengers, then he wouldn't have been able to leave. So a bit of a paradox there. Anyway, Loki is found guilty, but just before he's taken away, Agent Mobius shows up and saves his life. Mobius confirms his job is to track down dangerous variants. For now, Loki is shown a best hits of his life, including instances from the future. He sees his mother die, which at this point hadn't happened yet for the Loki that we're watching. Apparently this is supposed to happen with specific emphasis on Loki's traits about causing pain and mischief so others can achieve their best selves. While Mobius is distracted, Loki manages to slip away. He threatens to gut Casey like a fish, and he finds a drawer full of Infinity Stones with the Tesseract in hand. Loki questions whether the TVA really are the greatest power in the universe, as Loki moves back to the room that he started in with Mobius. He sees his own death play out in the hands of Thanos. This is the conclusion to this timeline, of course, and his timeline. Eventually, Mobius shows up and confirms why they're using Loki after all. Turns out the variant they've been tracking is actually Loki himself. We then jump to Oklahoma in 1858. TVA show up to track their target, but this hooded figure drops a lantern on the ground and watches as everything and everyone burns. And that's the end of episode one, A Glorious Purpose.
Well,
so from there,
Yeah, no. From there, we start. What I love about this particular episode, and you know, you can say what you want about Disney Plus, because they own everything. You can use that. You can use that. The footage. You know, we start right where we left off, and you know, my first point is, when it comes to all this, is the seamlessness of the two shows, the movies and the show, and how they just kind of really intertwine everything. And they've really done a great job with all these B, D, and C characters, giving them their own life and whatever. So, Sydney, what was the first, or what are some things that you saw in this episode that kind of really stood out?
You know what? I actually want to kind of go off of what you were just talking about, how this jumps in from the movies, because I think that the first time round, I hadn't seen any of these Avengers films in such a long time. I didn't really remember Loki grabbing the Tesseract. So my first point is something that I had to do for my own, I don't know, we called it homework earlier. So homework. So I want to just remind people who are like me, who might like love Loki and think that this show is really creative, but might not have memorized like all of his backstory. So I'm going to tell you guys my first point, because I think it's synopsis oriented anyways. Those kind of pre-Loki television show events. So in 2012, we meet this character, Loki. So Loki's being a bad guy, and he opens up a portal to New York City, between New York City and space. There's a huge battle between the Chitauri and the Avengers in New York. Loki is Hulk smashed, and then he's captured by S.H.I.E.L.D. And then the S.H.I.E.L.D. Agents hand him over for punishment and judgment on Asgard. So we see S.H.I.E.L.D. put him in handcuffs and put that metal bar over his mouth, which you're going to recognize clearly from episode one. And he sort of leaves that first Avengers movie looking like that. And then we see him enter Thor and the Dark World in those handcuffs again. And there he's in Asgard, and he's sentenced by Odin for those attacks that he perpetrated on New York. And during that, Frigga dies, his mom. And then Thor and Loki team up to defeat the Dark Elves. So we see him, you know, kind of getting along with his brother. And then he teams up with his brother in Ragnarok. And then he, of course, dies at the hands of Thanos. So the point is that the Loki that we've been seeing for years in these Avengers movies is a fully redeemed character. You know, we came to love him, of course, through all of that. But the guy we're seeing here is from 2012. He hasn't experienced all of that stuff, just like Kirk said earlier. Because when Thanos wins, he snaps his finger and 50% of the beings in the universe are just completely wiped away. That's the blip. And the Avengers want to kind of undo that work. So they run around and time travel themselves. And they're going to various points in this like entire Avengers timeline, grabbing these infinity stones, because once they have the stones, they're going to be able to snap their fingers and bring everyone back. So what I want to say about that is that Marvel brings up two rules of time travel in the, I guess it's an Endgame, but it's Tilda Swinton's The Ancient One telling all of these to Bruce Banner. And essentially you cannot, this is number one, you cannot undo what's already been done. You can't go back in time and then prevent Thanos from doing what he's already done, that blip. And if you do go back in time and you do fuck with the past, a new timeline is going to be created. Tilda Swinton, or the Ancient One or whatever, is the first person that I saw kind of create that ancient timeline in Endgame. She actually like magics it up on the screen. It's like physical presence and shows branches and stuff like that. So I think that's the first time we see that. But then that really brings us to where we pick up with Loki episode one. Because during that time traveling scavenger hunt, Stark and Captain America return to that 2012 scene in New York where Loki's been imprisoned. And during their effort to obtain the stones, Banner and Tony and I think Ant-Man sort of like flub and drop the Tesseract, and it slides across the floor to Loki, to a Loki who has literally just murdered Agent Coulson and led a terrorist attack. He grabs it and he disappears.
Kirk, what are some of the things that you saw in episode one that kind of stood out?
Well, first, let me respond to both your comments about this opening tying into the 2012 Avengers. I agree with you that I think that one of the struggles that I think Disney Plus and Marvel has had since probably about since the Loki season is the Disney Plus shows are not, they're not as strong or not as popular or not doing as well or getting a lot more criticism or and I think, you know, some of that is they're trying to introduce new characters. Some of it's, you know, the delay between movies and the TV shows. There's all sorts of issues going on there. I mean, they've really, you know, they've introduced a lot of new characters. And I think the thing about the Loki show that was so immediately engaging was that this opening tie to the MCU that you knew and you loved and you already had all this established history with, you know, it used that as a launching period so that you felt like, okay, I know who I'm dealing with. I know it, and I love this and I love that. And that was great. And this is so cool. And oh, this is a great twist. And now we're going off in a whole new direction, something never even thought of, that there could be a whole different storyline for Loki and different characters and a different place and a different location and a different, you know, history and new villains and all sorts of new stuff. I mean, the entire Loki series, I mean, the TVA is brand new, the technology of the TVA and the time travel and the multiversal war and, you know, the He Who Remains and Sylvie and all of that is all brand new in all the locations they go to. Mobius, Renslayer, lots and lots of B-15, great new characters. But it all feels like it's part of the MCU because of the way that they anchored it right from the beginning. So I thought that was great. I wanted to start off by talking a little bit about the title. I think the title Glorious Purpose. It's obviously a play on the words that Loki often speaks. You know, I have glorious purpose. I'm supposed to be king. I'm supposed to be, you know, over Midgard and Asgard and, you know, his narcissistic kind of belief system about his self-fulfilling prophecy and everything. But I think it also, glorious purpose, touches on the overall theme of at least this episode for sure, and throughout, I think, the season as well, the lack of free will in this universe, and that we're simply here to fulfill our glorious purpose in the sacred timeline, whatever that may be. And as Loki finds out in this episode, for him, that's being a villain who motivates other people to reach heroic levels like the Avengers and be the best person that they can be. And that's his purpose, not to be king, not to be a ruler, not to be. And this kind of thread throughout the episode, and, you know, as we go through, I'll call it out the places I felt I was seeing it, that there's just this lack of self-actualization and ability to have your own, determine your own future. Everything's pre-written, preordained, and set, and kind of a punch in the gut for him, I think, as and for us as well.
Well, you know, the problem with Loki is he is the Greek tragedy.
Yeah,
he is the Darth Maul. He is the man bringing that stone all the way up to the top of the hill and keep going back down. And, you know, we've always believed in our lives that there is free will in our life. And when you go along that line, he becomes a very sympathetic character really quick. Oh my God, that's why everything never turns out. And it's really interesting how they showed that. I mean, I love to just go back to what you were saying when he was going through his whole, you know, indoctrination of the TVA. The guy's like, please sign, here's everything that you've ever spoken. He's like, what do you mean? Oh yeah, sign this one. I mean, it was just done and, so
and
well.
Not only that, but it's only about 10 or 10 or 12 inches tall, not even.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of like I said, punch in the gut, kind of like, oh my God, that's what my life comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
A 10 inch stack of paper that no one cares about. No one's going to read that. You know what I mean?
You're just another number. You're just another number. You're
another
not
cog
that person
in the wheel.
That people. Yeah. You're not right. That person that people are going to remember.
But I think it's a play also, not a play. It's hints to the future of the series, which right. is it's setting up a story and a show where he's going to actualize himself and have a true glorious purpose by fighting the TVA and trying to restore free will to the universe. I mean, essentially that's what they're trying to do. So glorious purpose is kind of like, means a lot of things, I think, in this episode.
I think it's comedic too, because I mean, he stands on a tiny rock in the middle of the Gobi Desert and he says, I right. am Loki and I am burdened with glorious purpose. I'm like, oh my God, get off that rock.
Well, it's all he has. It's all he has is his narcissism, you know? It's all, I think this, you know, the Loki that we see at the end of Endgame has gone through so much that he's changed. And he's started to see his purpose and want more from his life.
I think he just like always wanted to belong and he never did, because his dad, you know, set up this competition between him and his brother and, you know, kind of acted like he was an adopted kid all along. And then he kind of gets to hang out with the Avengers a little bit and they kind of let him be on the team. He gets to be on a team with his brother. He just wanted to be loved.
He just wants to hug.
He wants a hug.
He just wants a big hug.
He wants a hug.
Mm-hmm.
He's just, you know.
It's an Asgardian hug.
I think we're talking a lot more about free will, like during all of this. I mean, I think that's my point number two, but.
Well, go right ahead. Go right ahead. So why don't you talk about free will?
Okay. Well, I think that between episodes.
Do you have any? Do I have any free will in this podcast? No.
Alex, no, I am in charge. Stop. Okay. So. All right. I mean, I think in episodes one and two, I mean, I think he's pretty freaking redeemed at the end of episode one, even though he's still kind of trying to bring down the TVA. He's like, I'm going to, you know, I just want to meet the timekeepers and take it all. But I think he like legitimately feels at the end of episode one that I do not need to be a villain anymore. He wants free will back. So I don't think it's a bad guy move for him to want to fight the TVA. But yeah, I mean, my entire point is that episode one thing where he has to sit down with Mobius and they're watching that reel of his entire life. I mean, obviously Loki's actions have always been projections of his doubt, of his own self-importance. And Mobius asks, you know, I want to know what makes Loki tick. And Loki says, well, he was born to be king. Well, king of what exactly? Midgard, Asgard, the Nine Realms. Mobius offers space. Space is big, Loki, the king of space. Mobius was pointing out that like all of this, all of what you want, Loki, you don't even know what you want. It's not what you want. You just really want this external validation. And I said that a second ago. It's just like because Odin raised him to compete with Thor for approval. It's like Kindle Roy in Succession. But Loki's never put this together in the past. He's never understood the reasons for his actions. And in this scene, I think that Mobius is showing Loki he's like not the smartest person in the room anymore. And I mean, the first time around with all of these episodes, I don't think I understood Loki the way I do now. But I never really realized that like he was being so played by Mobius. I mean, Mobius really has emotional intelligence and has showing that in these conversations. But
yeah, I agree.
They are going back about how like the rule, like everyone wants to be ruled because free will breeds shame. And I think that's interesting because I think this series is talking about free will. And like Mobius says, you're a real metaphor guy. I love it. It makes you sound smart. And Loki's like, I am smart. And Mobius is like, I know. But I think Mobius actually means that too. Do y'all think so?
Oh, yeah. I definitely get that from his demeanor when he says, you know, it wasn't sarcastic. You are smart, but you're just pointed in the wrong direction.
Totally. That's exactly how to say it. Right.
Yeah. They pulled him from Avengers 2012, where he was trying to take over and go to war with Earth and take it over and become king and ruler. And they needed to get him up to where he was you know, in Ragnarok or the end of Ragnarok and heading into Endgame. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they had to push him through that, self-realization and self-analysis in this episode. Yeah, they didn't want to stay back. He'd already been that. They needed to get him up here, and then now they're going to take him somewhere, the next level. But they had to do that. So
when you know, Loki's feeling kind of beat up because he's learning so many sad things, like kind of about his life, and he says, "I know what this place is. It's an illusion. It's a cruel, elaborate trick conjured by the weak to inspire fear." And then when I heard Loki blame the TVA of being that, I was like, "Loki, you're projecting. That's what you are," you know. And then it was like 10 minutes later, after Loki's run around, like having the most hilarious fight with E15, that Loki says, "Oh no, that was me. That's me. That's how I act." I mean, he kind of figures himself out. And yeah, he's just like a poor wounded boy. And so I think that, you know, kind of putting that ego aside, I think Mobius knew all along that Loki was someone who could really grow.
Yeah. And that acceptance at the end that you're talking about, that scene, because it starts off by him sitting down. He's beat. He's defeated. He's, you know, recognizes that the cube won't do anything for him, the Tesseract. And he says, "I can't go back, can I?" Which to me was acceptance. And then he used the exact same words, which is what you just said, that he had used to describe the TVA earlier, to describe himself. "It's a cruel, elaborate trick conjured by the weak to inspire fear." And Mobius finished it by saying, "The desperate play for control." And then he says, "You do know yourself." And I just, you know, just, it was just, he had come from the very, in just that one episode, he had traveled that, you know, years of growth.
So I would have probably said about it 2 years ago when I watched this for the first time, that episode one is very explicative. Someone help. The word is where you are using too many words to describe something that they could have not said it, but shown it. And I don't feel that way anymore. I think that all of this.
You think it was too wordy?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that it was a lot of conversations, a lot of people explaining to Loki what the TVA is, a lot of people explaining to Loki, you know, what his life was and bringing him full circle. But I don't feel that way anymore. I feel like every single sentence between Mobius and Loki really honed in on Loki as a person and what he's experienced. And I feel like I identify with Loki. You know, I mean, he can be self-conscious and insecure. And I think that, I mean, it doesn't always breed the best personal characteristics. So I think he's just a really lovable person.
Yeah. I think it's just great writing because, you know, in other series or other shows, if you had a lot of this exposition and dialogue that, you know, that, yeah, I agree. You might be like, "Ugh, when's something going to happen?" You know? But I didn't feel that way at all, you know, watching either the first time or on rewatches. But I just think it's just because it's so well written, you know, and it's so, the dialogue and the chemistry between Mobius and Loki is just fantastic.
I think also for the person that knows a lot about Loki and the person that's just watching it because it's on Disney Plus, they do a really great job of keeping you in the dark, but they string you along really well, I think, because that first scene with Miss Minutes explains everything. You know, there's some tension with everybody's got a little tension going on at the TVA, and you don't know what it is, but you know it's something. And we still didn't know in the beginning who was the bad guy. We still don't know.
Still not sure.
No, but I'm just saying, we still don't know who the bad guy is, but we know it is a bad guy. And I think going through that whole process was really neat. I mean, you know, one of the things I loved, and I just loved that first scene because it was so, and I use it in quotes, it was so bad that it was good, meaning the video, you know, just the whole indoctrination and then the whole interrogation. I'm just looking at it from the 1,000 feet, you know, watch. It's like, it was great. And it was exactly what it needed to be because, as an outsider looking in for just the first episode, knowing the way things are, the TVA looks like almost a house of cards because there's a lot of infighting, you know, when Mobius goes to his girlfriend, and I'm using that in quotes, you know, oh, you have all my stuff, you know, around and da 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 da. And he's trying to massage the her ego and still get what he wants. Because you know there's something going on, you just don't know what it is just yet. So Kirk, do you have any another point for this episode?
I agree with both of you guys, and I also think that they didn't go in the traditional big opening action sequence that tends to be happening more and more and to grab your attention and get you to sit down and stay and watch. And it just did such a artful way of introducing all these new weird mysteries. Yes. About the MCU. First it locks you down in the MCU. Here's the Avengers. This is where you are. You're in this world that you think you know. Now we're going to introduce all this craziness. You know what I mean? Who's TVA? What is a variant? You know, what is this technology that they're using? We've never seen anything like it. They're resetting the timeline. Where did that come from? What the heck is, you know what I mean? And it's like, and then they bring him to the TVA, and it's so different than anything we've seen before. The way it's the aesthetic of it, the design of it. It's like the 20s mashed up with the 50s colored in a 70s orange and brown palette, you know, and it's just like nothing we've ever seen before. There's this claustrophobicness to it. There's this unsettling familiarity, right? We've all gone to a bank or the DMV and had those lines with the ropes. We've all been there. So like, but this is, it's almost like, are we in hell? Are we, what the hell is this? You know what I mean? I thought it was fantastic. And I found that so much more engaging and captivating than having watched a 2-minute, you know, chase on a train with guns and, you know, bolts of green energy.
That's probably why I'm here. I mean, because I might have been lost if the very first couple of minutes were a big action sequence, but instead I'm drawn in by the mysteries. I mean, who's that robot? What are you signing? You know, why are they taking your clothes off and putting you in a super cute jumper? But it was the lighting installation in the ceiling, and he goes from one room to another. And yeah, that's what grabbed me.
Now, I do have a question for you, Kirk, since you're an artist. What did you take from each scene? Like, I don't know how to explain the question, but it just seemed like they really storyboard it really well with the palette of each room. And like you were saying, the DMV and whatever, the retro look of it, it's modern, yet it's retro. And
there's actually three tiers to the color palette. The entry level and all of the admission and the workers like Casey and everything else there, that whole floor or level is orange. And then the next, then when, you know, we're like Mobius has lunch and where the library is and all that, that's like got a green palette. That whole level is kind of like a mid-executive level. And then when he goes up to Renslayer, that's all gold.
Right.
So it's, you know, they've just instituted like a color palette for the different designations of work or authority or whatever, or administration. I don't know. But yeah, they've really thought it through in great detail, you know.
And the bottom line is, make sure you get a ticket. If you don't get a ticket, man.
Yeah. That shut him up real fast. He's like, oh, here's my ticket.
Well, that dude Martin or whatever his name was, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, my dad sits on the board of Goldman Sachs and all that crap, right? So I someone online was saying that they thought it was meant to possibly emulate Martin Skelly,
yeah,
Pharma Boy, who did all, yeah. So this is pretty funny, but I don't think it's a throwaway thing, because no, all those lines, you know, like you know, my dad sits on the board, and do you know who I am? You're making a terrible mistake. The fact that it might be the Pharma Boy, everything else, I think it's meant to show us that people that end up here tend to be these selfish, narcissistic, superiority complex type people.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Because right,
they're the ones who are often breaking, taking advantage of an opportunity to change the flow of stuff, or at least it's kind of implied.
Well, the only people we know who have been pruned are a bunch of Lokis and then that guy, right? And so you did pull out a character characteristic that those all of those people share.
Yeah.
I love the first words out of Miss Minutes. Do you remember what she said? She said exactly what Loki said. I shouldn't be here. You know, I mean, or something right. along those lines. Like, I know you're thinking you shouldn't be here. Yes, you should. And it's because they all have those same traits. And like you said, they're all cut from the same mold, so to speak. Right.
Did you notice that as her thing just starts and she starts to do the introduction, she's in a couple different environments in the window of the TV or whatever.
Okay.
And one of them is a clock, which has bars on it, which she's holding like a prisoner. And the pendulum underneath the cuckoo clock is a ball and chain. And it's just this interesting, I mean, I think it's meant to kind of reinforce, you know, you're kind of like, you're never leaving, dude, type of thing. But also, I wonder if it's a hint about Miss Minutes. Is Miss Minutes is trapped in this TVA as well?
Ooh, I like that. I mean,
you know, I'm not jumping ahead, but I'm jumping ahead in the sense of,
and you again, told us we couldn't do that.
No, no. What I mean by that is there's it's a Pandora's box or it's an onion. There is a lot of layers to this.
We did review the trailer, so I think I know where you're going. So that's safe.
No, I'm just saying there's just a lot of every character isn't what it seems.
Right.
That's my point. And everybody has a second tier of nightmare. And I say nightmare because, yes, the sacred timeline is important, but there is a bigger problem that we just don't know about in the first episode, but we know it's there.
It's interesting that you use that word nightmare, because they use that word in the episode when Loki's walking with Moebius from the meeting with Renslayer, I think. And he's seeing for the first time through the windows or whatever, the outside, but he says, you know, I'm going to burn this place to the ground. It's typical Loki. And Moebius' response is hilarious. He's like, good, you can start with my desk.
I know.
Which I thought was hilarious, right? And then he goes something about it's a nightmare. And Moebius says, oh, that's a different department. He says, I'll help you burn them down.
Right.
And it's kind of hinting again at what you're saying.
I just think that there's just a lot of layers to this. And I know we're going to have more questions after we watch season two. And then when you watch season one with season two, we're going to probably end up doing a podcast about the missing parts of all of it, because there's just a lot to this. So I think it's up to you, Kirk. Do you have any other points that you want to share for just the first episode?
Well, first of all, did you want me, I thought you want to go through and kind of articulate the multiversal war that Miss Minutes.
Yeah. Why don't you go through that on episode one?
So the multiversal war, countless unique timelines that battled each other for supremacy, nearly resulting in the destruction of everything. Then all-knowing timekeepers emerged, reorganized the multiverse into a single timeline. That's called the Sacred Timeline. And the TVA protects the Sacred Timeline. When people verge off of it, they're called a variant. If they're left unchecked, they can create a potential nexus event, which could create another multiverse and then the destruction of the Sacred Timeline, and the whole things kind of would start over. So the TVA monitors these variants and prunes any divergent timelines for all time, always.
Now, to just get through a couple of things, there's two types of ways that Lokis, you know, they can either be pruned or they can be, pruning is dying and reset is erasing their memory so that they can do their thing again. It's just, and I say that just because everybody knows that probably that is listening, but let's just keep this, throw that out there.
Yeah. They're two very different things. Well, mine's kind of unrelated, but so we were talking a few minutes ago about Loki and Moebius kind of walking down that curved hallway and you see the city that all of these TVA workers live in. And I listened to an interview by one of the artistic directors of the show. It's like on the Marvel, like the official Marvel podcast. And I'm really obsessed with these people, the art team for all of this. But I don't know if Kirk, you've read any of the books for, you know, the TVA timeline and the Kang timeline, but I guess it's described in those books that the TVA, and I think we know a little bit about this, is kind of outside of time and it's outside of the dimensions that we know. And the description I really liked is that you could put carpet outside and you do not need windows because there is no weather there. So I liked that. I don't even feel like there was glass in between where they were walking and what was out there. I mean, and it was so futuristic, but kind of even more than that. And another thing that obviously
it's interesting that Loki's response to his awe of that was that he turns to Mobius and says, "I thought there was no magic here," as if this is so unknown to me. This must be magic. You know what I mean? This can't be reality. This has got to be something different.
Yeah, it's what takes us into it being science fiction.
But what's interesting is Loki thinks of it as magic, where they might call it something else.
It's just not the restraints that living in our dimension put on you. There's no physical restraints there, you know? I mean, I'm not sure if they're dealing with the same, I'll just say gravity, that we are. Yeah, very different place.
That's a great point. I mean, and yeah, it is... That's the one thing that you can get out of this is visually, I think it's a lot different than everything else that Disney's put out, I think. I could be wrong, but, you know, in terms of Marvel stuff.
I think I agree with you. I think that's because it did more than just introduce a new character. It introduced an entirely new concept to the MCU, the multiverse. It introduced time travel in a way that was a lot different than what happened in Endgame and Infinity War. It introduced, you know, just a whole ton of new stuff.
Now, was the TVA there before? Like, was it in the comics, or is this just a brand new concept? Oh, it was. So
no,
this isn't like completely. This isn't like completely out of left field.
No, it came from the comics.
And like, but I think all of the time agents kind of looked like the Minutemen. They were all kind of like the same looking. I don't think there was a Mobius is what I'm saying. There was a Ravonna Renslayer.
No, there was a Mobius. And there was, well, Renee Renslayer, yes, there is that character as well. She actually is the romantic person in Kang's life. They have a relationship. Yeah. So whether they're going to pursue that in this, I don't know. But yeah, she has a pretty big role in the comics. The TVA has a very small role, very, very small. They don't do much. They've only been in a few things. They never really did a whole lot with that. So Marvel is, the MCU has taken it and, you know, expanded it dramatically and fleshed it out dramatically. There is a Mobius, though. I wanted to talk about Mobius for a second, though. I just think that, you know, their introduction of him was just, and again, this is why this was such a great show to watch, the writing, the acting, everything, because it wasn't the traditional superhero, you know, knock around action bolt stuff like that. He's sympathizing with this child in this timeline that's about to be pruned and destroyed. And all the other guys around the other TVA agents are like, you know, just let's just go, let's do this, let's, you know, whatever, let me kill him, you know, now. But, and then he's like, chill, you know what I mean? I mean, have some respect, you know what I mean? Have some compassion, have some, and it just sets him up as this, you know, person that I think you immediately start to feel sympathy for or connection with. And then the same thing with his relationship with Loki. I mean, he's sarcastic and jibber jabbers with him back and forth, but you know, there's definitely a sympathy in him for Loki, and the way, because he treats him not like a criminal, not like a god or a maniac, but like a person. He talks to him like a person. And then, of course, Renslayer says to him, you know, you have a thing for broken things. So, you know, he's obvious, you know, that there, but it just makes him this character that you immediately feel, I felt immediately connected to and liked and wanted to see more of and enjoyed watching.
Did you say that you think that little French boy was pruned? I mean, I thought he was maybe
the whole timeline was reset, but
I think only variants get pruned and he wasn't the problem.
Well, yeah, but he's a, well, that time. Yeah. But that's a timeline because they set a charge. And as you know, so what that means is that everybody that's in that existence right there
is going to change.
Is going to. Yeah. They got to cut it off.
I don't think I realized that. I thought only the variant had to leave, but and then some of the physical stuff might go with it, but that other people who were affected didn't get punished.
And I think they added to that also, and this kind of comes to your point, Alex, about the complexity, you know, and the layers. The bubble gum, the kid had the bubble gum that had been given to them by this murderous villain, evil person that we're, you know, watching them pursue. Well, how evil is a person who's given a kid bubble gum? You know what I mean? It's like, not that that can't be, you know, misconstrued, but you know what I'm saying? In other words, it's just kind of like, that's kind of an odd thing for a big treacherous Marvel villain to do. Thanos wasn't going to give, you know what I mean?
He wouldn't give anything to anybody.
Okay, so you're saying that this mysterious villain that in France is maybe not such a bad person, and of course we're going to learn a lot more about this person, but it's also surprising on my rewatch for this, I didn't realize how many people this variant killed. I mean, she is slaughtering the timekeeper, so she, I think that was interesting for Disney.
This variant is, but we just know that. At this point, it's just this variant.
Yeah.
Yeah, you mean in terms of being really dark and kind of bloody and.
I think it surprised me. You know, I mean, they, especially for someone that we are also going to empathize with a little bit.
No. But what's interesting is that the TVA has never dealt with something like this before, and that's the thing. As much as the Lokis are crazy and whatever, they've always been predictable. And I think that's the difference with this particular situation versus previous Lokis. And obviously, I mean, it makes sense. But to really put a bow on this episode, what are some of your final thoughts, Kirk? I know you probably have a couple more points, so please.
I think we've covered most of it. I have one quick question. Was it, do you think Peggy Carter is the woman coming out of the portal in the hallway when they leave the, is it the lawyer's? I don't know if it's the Renslayer's office or whatever, but we see a timekeeper bringing someone in who's dressed and looks just like Peggy Carter. This is a big thing on the internet for a long time.
And it looks like, I don't think I know the scene.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't remember exactly where it is, but it's in a hallway and it's in the back right corner of the hallway. You see the gate open up and they're walking and talking. And the timekeeper comes through and is escorting a woman who's dressed just like her, same hair, looks exactly like her. So a lot of people are theorizing that it's that the whole storyline with Captain America, where he actually doesn't return and goes and lives with her, that he created right. another variant.
And she gets in trouble. I mean, and she's the one who gets called in, of course.
Mm-hmm. Oh, here we go.
I don't know. Who knows? Maybe they pruned him.
So on that note, the non-pruning stuff, Sydney, do you have any final thoughts on episode one?
Nope.
Okay. Thanks for that in-depth final point. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we are going to do season one, episode two. So hold on to your crown and we'll be right back. And we're back after that long awaited commercial. But we have our, we're going to start talking Loki one, Loki season one, episode two, variant. And we get a lot that's going on. So, Sydney, why don't you tell us a little bit about the episode so the viewers kind of get themselves back into it.
This synopsis is from Ready, Steady, Cut. So thanks to that website. The episode starts out, we've got one of our Minute Women, Agent C-20. She has been put under a mind control spell by the variant. They failed to catch the variant. And afterwards, Mobius meets with Ravona Renslayer. Loki, meanwhile, he is assigned to go through the TVA's files on himself, where he reads about Ragnarok, I think, for the very first time, and uses some clues to figure out that the variant could be hiding in Apocalypses. So naturally, they travel to Pompeii to test the theory if variant behavior will cause a Nexus event. However, Mount Vesuvius erupts and there is zero variants and no branches on the timeline. So which apocalypse is Sylvie in? Once they figure it out, they go to 2050 Alabama. It seems like a company town, into like a big box store rocks cart, and where they find all of the citizens in a storm shelter. Loki hangs out with Hunter B-15 and they spot a patron shopping for plants because that's what you do during a hurricane. It turns out that is another mind-controlled person, mind-controlled by the variant. The variant switches and controls other people, including B-15. And Loki tries to suck up to this variant by saying, hey, let's be a team because it's been my plan all along to infiltrate the TVA. And the variant turns him down. They find C-20 tied up in the back of the store, and C-20 admits that she's given up the location of the timekeepers. The Loki variant keeps jumping between random people, and Loki figures out that someone is putting reset energy canisters all over this store. And then we get our reveal that this variant is Sylvie. All of a sudden, these canisters begin to disappear into teeny tiny TVA time warp doors. The alarm goes off at the TVA headquarters, and Ravona Renslayer jumps into action and grabs her weapon. And does it a Minutemen do too, and start to like dive through time warp doors. Lastly, as the variant makes her escape, Loki stands between the door and Mobius sprinting towards him, and Loki goes through the door with her.
So the little time things that are opening up, just to clarify, they're sending the canisters, the pruning canisters, to all sorts of different locations all over the timeline. So you're getting basically a cluster bomb of these, time variant.
Huge amount of branches that they can't stop.
So all of the personnel at the TVA are running to go to these various hundreds of different
So that was her plan all along, was obviously to bomb the timeline, to create that havoc. She's an agent of chaos, but like, I don't think that.
Well, it's also to clear out the TVA.
Oh, so that they'll be not physically in the building any longer. Okay. Okay.
Right.
But her plan was not to lure the TVA agents to Rock's cart, like at any time. That was just luck that Loki figured it out. Because I think Loki, at one point during the conversation with one of her mind-controlled people, was like, this was your plan all along to bring us here. But no.
I don't know about that. I think it's possible. Absolutely that was her plan, because she had everything set up there. Whether or not this moment in time is when she wanted to do it, I don't know. That's not clear. You know, whether they got the jump on this idea of hers before she was ready to do it, or whether it all just kind of worked out perfectly, because she certainly was prepared and ready to put into place the whole plan. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
she launched all of those canisters, from there. So that was always going to be her plan, that at some point when they were out there, she was going to do that and then zip off to the TVA, I guess. I guess we'll find out next week.
She does not want to take over the TVA. She wants to destroy it.
So I like to always start off looking at the name of the, not always, but I thought these two episodes, it's certainly was appropriate. The name of this episode is The Variant. And obviously that's a reference to our Loki. It's a reference to the murderous Loki that the TVA is hunting down. But I think this episode begins for the very first time the clues that that others at the TVA are also possibly variants.
And I love it.
And I think that that's a big part of this episode. I also just felt that this episode stood out in terms of the dialogue writing and its moments of character development, especially between Loki and Mobius. I mean, they're just, it's just a great relationship.
So what were your clues that maybe some of the time agents were variants?
Well, I think that there's two big ones, but there's a number of them. But the first one is, Mobius. He has the
jet ski.
The jet ski thing, definitely. Okay. And then also he goes to meet with Renslayer and they're celebrating and he's got a drink and he goes to put it down and she starts yelling at him because of the rings on the table. And he's like, that must be from some of your other, agents. I don't know. She's like, you made all those rings. So clearly his memory or his recollection has been reset, or it seems like,
I didn't get it that way. I think that they're establishing that he put those rings there and he admits to having done it. He does talk about her other favorite, agents or whatever, but I don't think he denies the rings. I think the rings are there so that we know they're there and they set a marker of time that while he's been there, he's done this. Because I think that later we see that table and they're not there. That's an internet thing. And I am doing my rewatch along with like us podcasting on this. And it's something that I'm going to be looking for, but I think it's kind of like a time clue. But I will rewatch if you think he denies the rings being his.
Yeah, he definitely says, those must be from somebody, some other agent. You know what I mean? And she's like, you made all those rings. So, but anyway, so it's just, again, it's just a little clue. I think with B-15, we start to get something, the fact that she's so belittles and embarrasses Loki and is so hostile to him and towards variants in general, that she thinks they're cosmic mistakes. She has disdain for them. She looks down on them, that they're mistakes to be wiped away. I think this kind of foreshadows what we see at the very end when she gets possessed and then starts to sit up and realize something's not right. You know what I mean? And then of course, that somehow she's been changed and doesn't feel comfortable right there at that moment. And then 2 seconds later, we meet the other TVA agent who was captured. Right. And she's clearly remembering all of her.
Yeah. That one was, that's the first
and it's
super
all
one for me.
Just starting to kind of tumble as the episode moves on into this awareness that the TVA agents themselves may in fact be variants. So anyway, I think that's the significance of the title.
What did we talk about Miss Minutes and how cute she is, like stepping out of the computer screen and interacting with Loki? I didn't remember that. I did not remember her existing outside of a screen. She's adorable. And then Loki starts swatting her. And I'm like, Loki, please, you've redeemed yourself. You can't be like abusing cute little clocks. But
and she says something to him. We don't do that.
Would she call him a jerk? What'd she call him?
Yeah. When she went back in the computer, she called him a jerk.
That's cute.
Yeah, no, I love that sequence. And I think it's really important because it, like you said, it establishes that she can live and exist inside and outside of the technology.
I just love how they show the bureaucracy of the TVA. They're arguing over, did you watch the videos to Loki? And then he starts spouting out a bunch of them. He's like, well, I watched most of them. Well, I watched some of them, and we've all had to do that in our life where we've had to do some like videos that we don't want to do. My wife is going through that right now because every year she has to watch the same 5,000 videos to watch kids as a teacher. And she says to me the other day, she's like, I got half through them, like half of the 5,000 that she has to watch or whatever. I'm like, you're the best. Aww. So, Yeah, no, but it's just kind of interesting how this bureaucracy works. And going back to when Loki gets his jacket, I love that scene because he thinks he's like all like, you know, it looks like a members only jacket from the 80s, right? You know, he looks like he's like, and they're like, turn around and it says Variant. I mean, it's like a big, humongous F you to him and big scarlet letter. And it was just like, you know, could you make it more obvious? Like, you know, and that's the thing about that Loki that I just love is he knows how to put the levity in, and Tom and Owen Wilson just have such great chemistry. And I think they really did a great job of casting Owen Wilson in that because he's such a dude and he sounds dumb, but he also sounds smart. And I just love that combination in every one of his characters. So that's my two cents on this whole entire episode. But it's just fun to watch those two. I mean, I could just watch those two just have a conversation about the weather.
Amen. I agree. You had mentioned you brought up that it the 80s jacket looking.
Yeah.
It's also interesting that they then, you know, the first opening scene at the medieval thing is in the 80s.
Yep.
And then if you notice the fight scene music is holding out for a hero.
I loved it.
Oh, I love that.
It's from the soundtrack of Footloose.
Yeah.
Of course, Footloose, the story of a town that outlawed dancing, perhaps a metaphor for the free will.
Oh, I love it, Kirk.
Yeah, right.
Look at you going deep dive here on us.
Metaphors.
And then, of course, here comes the town. The hero comes to the town to bring it back, played by Kevin Bacon. So is Sylvie the hero who's trying to free everyone from the TVA? Or is Loki the hero that Sylvie has been holding out for to help her in her revolt? I don't know, but it's also an interesting tie back to the Guardians of the Galaxy and Star-Lord because he loves Kevin Bacon.
Wow.
Thinks he's a hero and that Footloose is the best movie ever made. And if you remember from the, again, they were working so hard to integrate all of this together. You know what I mean? And I think it's, was one of the best, examples of that in the various Disney Plus series.
And I know I'm going to get hate messages for this. I just don't get the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Really?
Like, I mean, I just didn't like it. I mean, dude, I know.
You're going to get hate.
Yeah, I'm writing you a letter.
And you know what?
Tomorrow.
And you know what? I don't care. And I think the reason being is the 5,000 movies you had to watch Endgame. I just like by that time, I was so exhausted. I'm like, no more. I can't take any new characters or old characters or whatever characters or raccoons that talk or I am Groots. I'm like done. No, and
have you seen all three?
I've only seen I've seen the first one and I've seen part of the second one.
I haven't watched the new I Am Groot season two. I meant to save it for Fisher and I to watch together. They're like 5 minutes long. I'm so excited about them.
I know they're soon.
Yeah. And again, they're not bad movies. The perfect example is, I don't know if you ever saw the movie So I Married an Axe Murderer back in the 90s.
No.
Okay, well, it's a great movie, right? I didn't like it. I watched it with a good friend of mine, my best friend, and he like made me get it. And then once I got it, I was just like, oh my God, it's the greatest movie. It's just a funny, cute movie that brings back a lot of memories. And it's just like, I think I watched it because I had to, because I wanted to keep up with everything, but I kind of hate watched it. And I got to like rewatch it and kind of like, you know, really kind of.
I think I'm starting to realize I like movies where the main character is just like someone terribly wounded because his father was just such a jerk to him, and that's Star-Lord, and it's Loki. So yeah, I think I just need these wounded characters to feel better.
Well, just remember, all Disney princesses don't have moms usually.
Oh, that's sad.
Because you know, it's all single fathers. You know, Little Mermaid, Pocahontas, all of them. You know, it's just like they all have no. But that's a whole nother issue.
Coming back to the Miss Minutes segment.
Please let's go back to what we're doing here.
I just wanted to make a few other observations. So we established, you know, that it's pretty cool. She functions both in and out of the technology. So she's both 2D and 3D. And I thought that's kind of interesting. And then he says, are you a recording or are you alive? And she said, sort of both. And then he tries to smack her and she jumps out of the way. So she has reflexes, right? It's not just, you know, a digital pattern that's there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? She's actually, and then transfers into the computer via the screen. So there's almost a, speaking of magic, as we were earlier, a magical aspect to her as opposed to just AI, although I suppose super advanced technology would look
like
magic.
You said something interesting earlier that, you know, it's like, is she a variant? You know, is she someone who's trapped there by whoever rules of the TVA?
Well, we saw in the trailer for the second season that we did a podcast on, so I feel like I can say
you can bring something. It up. Yeah.
You know, that she like goes all like
Stay Puft Man.
Yeah, Stay Puft Man or Godzilla, you know what I mean?
I like to call her like white ghost from Pac-Man.
She had that Pac-Man ghost thing going on, which I didn't recognize the first five times I watched the trailer.
And she's like attacking people, it seems like. She's scaring people or attacking people. So perhaps she's some sort of entity that Victor Timely was able to capture in his TVA technology and utilize.
Hey, Sydney, what do you got for us?
So it's Sylvie hiding in apocalypses. I was really drawn to this whole concept the first time around. Like, it's what I was saying earlier about the show just being extremely creative. So while Loki's working to find his superior variant, he asks for his file. He reads the report on Ragnarok, which was a level seven apocalypse. And I don't know. I just theorize that means because a lot of people did survive Ragnarok, because we've got like New Asgard and Finland or wherever they put that on Earth. And I think that's the first time he ever, you know, found out about Ragnarok, because he hadn't lived through it yet. So he realizes there's no variant activity, and he puts together that it's not that all of the citizens of Asgard were just following the sacred timeline to a T in every second that leads to Ragnarok, but instead there's really not much of a predestined timeline right in front of an apocalypse. I kind of think that means the timekeepers don't even bother writing a section of sacred timeline plot, because it won't matter. It's not like, and you're not going to be able to deviate from something that hasn't been preordained by the timekeepers, but it wouldn't matter even if it was preordained. Even if you create a Nexus event like right before the apocalypse, that new branch would just be ended too at that apocalypse. So they are able to narrow down her particular apocalypse to that big box store, and it's a level 10 apocalypse in Alabama. Stay safe, guys, in Alabama. Anyways, I just think it's really well thought out. I really think it's so creative, something I have never seen before. I mean, I like sci-fi, I like fantasy, but just to place these things in the apocalypses, I thought it was so funny and kind of terribly sad to see them in Pompeii. I thought it was really, really touching to see all of those rocks cart families kind of huddled in that storm shelter, and sad to see.
How about when he jumps on the cart and lets the goats free in
Pompeii? Oh my God.
It says, be free, my fellow horned friends.
those people in the rocks cart basement just like really wanted help. And then Mobius kind of just like walks through them. And I mean, he interacts with them, but thought that was a little bit heartbreaking that he knew everyone was going to go. And that's just the TVA's, all of their experiences that they have to become kind of hardened to that.
So that said, what other scenes or points popped out at you, Kurt?
Well, I just really loved the scenes with Mobius and Loki, you know, whether it was they're discussing the jet skis. I just think there's amazing writing. I loved when they were in the cafeteria, you know, and he's telling him that we all come from chaos and we try to make sense of, and how it all doesn't make sense. So it's best to just accept it. you know, he feels lucky, and this is Mobius, to have been born into the chaos of the TVA. So he has his own glorious purpose. And then that, of course, tip of the hat to the previous episode. And then Loki says, a universe without chaos sounds boring. I thought that was beautiful. And then he said, and then he says, you called me a scared little boy. You're wrong. I know something children don't. No one bad is ever truly bad, and no one good is ever truly good. And I just thought that was really great foreshadowing of both Loki and Sylvie, and also He Who Remains.
Right.
You know, so, you know, the it's never black and white.
Well, I've said this before. We're never going to be judged on our worst day or our best day. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things that in the last like month, I've just kind of like thought about a lot. Because we've all had our awesome moments, and some of those same awesome moments have been followed by some of the worst, our worst of ourselves. So, I mean,
well, to me, that's like Loki starting to be able to forgive himself.
Right.
Starting to be able to say, just because I did these bad things doesn't mean I have to be a bad person, and that I can change and I can become something other than that.
Do you think going into season two, and again, this is jumping ahead, but it's not like, it's just a theory. Do you think Loki will ever get to the point where he is good? I mean, in the sense of like Thor good.
He's too smart. Yeah. I mean, he's just too smart. I think he'll always have a little something up his sleeve, but I mean, is it going to help others or is it only going to help himself? I think we see that he wants to help others, so he'll use it for mostly good.
I think he's going to be an anti-hero. He'll always be an anti-hero because of that, you know, which, you know, means that sometimes his motivations will be selfish, but I think as he grows, he'll make sure that they don't, you know, affect people in a horrible way, you know, or at least that's, you know, I mean.
Because remember, good is boring.
Yeah, exactly.
Good is boring.
Chaos is without, living without chaos is boring. And then when Morbius says to him, do you have candy in Asgard? And he says, yeah, grapes and nuts. And Morbius is like, no wonder you're so bitter.
But you're regular.
And then the best one was when he's like begging Morbius to trust him and let him come on this final mission. And he says, why is it the people you can't trust always saying, trust me?
Yeah, that's a good line.
You know, yeah, I just thought there's just some great, great lines between them.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
The final confrontation between the two Lokis was like chef's kiss. I mean, the environment wasn't the best, the retail store environment, but the fact that you're meeting her through all these different enchanted civilians, you know, first B-15 and then the other two people, two other guys. And it dragged out the mystery while yet exposing you and introducing you to this character.
I will say they have a great way, and it's, you know, a lot of shows have a great way. And I just think, you know, thinking about the Marvel Disney stuff and the Star Wars Disney stuff, they always have a great ending, you want more after every show. I mean, we know who it is, but we don't know who it is at this point. And it's like perfect. It makes you want to watch next week. And I think, you know, great shows do that. And I mean, I just think of The Walking Dead, one of the best cliffhangers of all was when they were at Terminus and they're all in that they're all going to get their heads chopped off and boom, it's done. And it's the same thing with Negan. As much as you might not like all the Negan years, and as awful as that scene was, that episode, that last episode going into the next season, there was nothing better. It was just such a great episode.
Did you, Alex, did you read the comics?
I did not.
Kirkman wrote the comic so that every final page of every issue was a full page, splash page cliffhanger.
Wow.
So every single book was like that. And I think they tried hard. They tried to introduce that into the show, I think, as much as they could. But to your point, I think this episode of this show did just that with this, especially with this episode. I mean, you know, here we get the introduction, all in a matter of like a sec, I don't know, 30 seconds. We get the reveal of the main villain who, you know, was a big shock at the time. We get the bombing of the timeline and the TVA just fucking coming unglued.
I know. That was awesome.
And then we get her and Loki jumping through a gate to we don't know where. And it's just like, oh my God. You know, I mean, that to me was like a season finale ending.
And you know what was nice about that? When she was talking to Loki, she knew, well, he didn't realize the extent of what's going on. And Loki kind of prides himself on know what's going on. He thinks it's about taking, you know, trying to get to the three
timekeepers.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Space lizards.
Yes, the space lizards. There's a bigger issue going on that he's going to learn about in the upcoming episodes. And I just find that so fascinating when, you know, you've got this, for lack of a better term, rebel. These rebels or this insurgents trying to mess around and you're learning about it. And I love that we're going through his perspective. And it's just fun to watch. It's just fun. And it just goes back to how much of a variant he really is. He might be completely different than all the, he might be the variant of variants, which we are going to come to find out if that's true.
Yeah, well, there's a one point in the beginning of the episode where Mobius points out that the TVA has pruned more Lokis than almost any other variant. So Loki, you know, is this being that always finds a way to create new time branches.
Right.
And then he even says, Mobius says, no two are alike. It makes him like the ideal multiversal character. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I thought that was cool.
Okay, so one thing you said you liked was seeing the variant, you know, mind controlling all of the different civilians, and then like Loki fights them. So I liked it too, but I wanted to see Loki use his magic for the first time. The only time we see him use his magic, and I mean this is talking about episodes 1 and 2 combined, is when he dries his clothes off when they come in the door to Rock's cart. I thought that was funny and cute, and I liked that he had that ability because everyone else was soaking wet and they're gonna have to like stomp through the entire place being loud. But I do wish he had kind of cloned himself or done like the projection and things like that, especially when that huge motherfucker came at him. But soon, season 2, season 2 we're gonna see, I think, some magic, so here we go.
Yeah, I think that was strategic on his part, from a writing point of view. I think that was strategic because each one of those civilians was possessed by the variant, and he was desperately wanting to talk and plot and scheme with the variant. He was trying to make a connection with the variant. We're not sure, you know, what his intention is, and I love that about this as well. You know, is he going to support the TVA? Has he got his own thing where he's trying to, like, you know, save himself and use this variant to do it? Or is he really interested in meeting this variant? Or we don't know really what his motivations are. But he definitely didn't want to kill them or, you know, trap them or anything like that. He wanted to connect with them.
He hates that there's no free will, and he hates that he's essentially a prisoner. I mean, his jacket says variant on the back. You know, he doesn't have, he has less free will than he ever did.
Absolutely.
All right.
Hey, before we wrap up this one, I just want to come back to the first one for a second. One other thing I just wanted to ask you guys your opinion on.
Sure.
You know, it each thing that they include seems to have connection to the story. And there was something we didn't talk about in his entrance into the TVA. And that's when he has to go through the robot detection area. And obviously, spoiler alert, you know, the timekeeper robot connection issue is obviously hinted at there. But do we think there's more to that? I mean, why would you set up this device that will filter out robots unless you've had some sort of robot infiltration in the past? You know what I mean? I kept coming back to the Doombots. Are you familiar with the Doombots from Dr. Doom in the comics?
Actually, I am. I actually remember those, yes.
Yeah, and he has a time platform. And he sends his Doombots all over the place, and they often the Fantastic Four would fight Dr. Doom, and then after two issues, you'd find out that particular Dr. Doom was actually a bot.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of funny though. The whole scene: am I a bot? I think I'm not a bot.
Do people really not know if they're bots?
Yeah, how would I know? How would I know if I'm not a bot?
Okay, so no, I don't really think that I thought of it that way. I think that like a robot wouldn't have free will anyways, except for maybe Miss Minutes. I'm not sure what she is. But, if they're programmed by somebody else, then maybe that person who programmed them would be the actual offender to the sacred timeline. But then also, like, what happens when you get pruned? I mean, why prune a robot? Because, well, we know where they go. And maybe that's just not a place for robots. It seems to be a place for living beings.
Hmm. Maybe, you know what, I just think you have to wait to see what plays out. I really didn't think that much of it until you brought it up, because, I just kind of thought, okay, yeah.
It could mean all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And it could be an Easter egg to all of that Dr. Doom stuff.
Which will be exciting. Any other points for episode
sure.
two?
Sure. Okay. So I really like that Mobius was reading that jet ski. Well, he wasn't reading it. Loki was reading the jet ski catalog, and then Mobius like put that down, you know, we don't have time for that kind of fun or whatever. And then there's another part, I think it's episode one, in the time theater Mobius is drinking Josta soda. So I looked it up to see if it was real, and I never had it. We drank Jolt Cola in the 90s, which I think was its like competitor, because Josta was one of those high energy like cracked out Mountain Dews, I guess. And so he's just got a lot of 90s vibes. The last time I jet skied was the 90s.
And like I said, this episode, we're, you know, introduced to all sorts of clues, I think, about people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to season two, is finding out where all of these people came from.
Well, in the preview, which again, it's fair game, right?
Do it.
One of the buildings he appears in, because he's time slipping, or it's apparently, you know, he's like twisting and turning and then popping up in different places. One of them is in front of a building for
jet skis. I know. I'm hoping that's where he like worked.
My hope is we're gonna get to get some background on that. Maybe you'll go, maybe he's in there.
That's what I'm hoping. Yep.
Yeah.
I liked it when Loki was explaining to the crowd what the difference between duplication casting and you do need me. And they do.
And he's like, Morbius is like, take a breath.
Okay, there's a scene when like Loki and Mobius are about to get on the elevator. And I think Mobius had just met with Ravonna Renslayer, and there may have been some tension. And when they're about to get on the elevator, Mobius starts saying, I think, like really hurtful things to Loki. And it was almost like after the previous episode where they had bonded and he had understood Loki. I didn't write in my notes any of what those hurtful things are. Do you guys remember the scene though?
Yeah, that's when he called him he thought he was trying to help this little runt.
Yeah, the ice runt. Thank you. So why? Why was he trying to bring him down all of a sudden?
I don't think he was bringing him down. I think he was just fed up with Loki's shit. And that here he's jumping through hoops to try and get this guy a little more time and a little, you know, and use him in a way that's going to help the TVA, but also help Loki. And Loki's just fucking it up constantly.
All right, so he's already been nice. He doesn't have to be nice every second.
Yeah, I think he was just like, right. Well, yeah, and it was more just kind of like, look, here's the reality. You know what I mean? I thought that, you know, you can believe whatever you want. I think he gives him two options. He says you can believe that this is that or this is that. I don't give a shit.
You have two choices. Choice A.
Yeah, we got a job to do. So you pick which one you want to believe, and let's go.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I think he was just angry at him.
Another
frustrated
point I have, me saying Ravona's name reminded me, and I told you guys earlier that I'm gonna like keep my eyes open for those rings, Kirk, you too, because I think you and I might have read them differently. And part of why I read them differently is because I had read on the internet that there's something to those rings having disappearing maybe at a different point in time. But the other thing that I read on the internet about Ravona Renslayer's office is that apparently at some point we're going to see her diploma on the wall, and the name on the diploma is, don't have it written down, but I think it's like Rebecca something. And I guess if you've read the books, that that is her mortal name, that when she's like kind of in a relationship with Kang and stuff like that. So just kind of like a word to the wise that everyone, as they watch the next couple of episodes, can maybe look out for those two things.
Well, she definitely, you know, there's she's in communication with somebody. I mean, we haven't gotten to those episodes yet in the season, but we will. And, you know, she's in communication and getting messages from somebody that we have to assume is Kang, but we don't know if it's Kang or whether it's Victor Timely or a different Kang we haven't met yet. But she's trying to do the work of this person. And, you know, when she says when she leaves in the end, I think she says something like, I'm going to find destiny or something like that. So I think that there's going to be a connection there with whichever Kang built this. But
I don't know who she's meeting with. I mean, like, I still have the impression that she believes in the timekeepers, you know, and I kind of think from the trailer that for season two, that maybe at that point she's becoming aware that there's someone behind the timekeepers. But I mean, she would have had been real dumb not to have realized that she's talking to three robots all the time. So maybe she wasn't talking to the timekeepers.
Well, you know what? We're just going to have to find out. I mean, you know, unfortunately, we don't know. And to speculate, you know, that's why we're going to cover that season two. And hopefully we're going to get some answers. I mean, you know.
Well, plus we're going to go through those episodes of this.
Yeah, exactly. I think we'll see some more clues. It's pretty soon.
Yeah, we'll get some more clues. That said, any final thoughts on season two, or do you guys have some more points?
I'm good.
No, I think I'm good.
Okay. So Sydney, why don't you, I know you have some news. Is that true?
I have some news. Kirk and I.
You have some news? I know you do. I know Kirk does, but why don't you start us off with some news?
All right, cool. All right. So Kirk and I are going to share a couple of things. My first one is teeny tiny, and that is that the price of Disney Plus is going up. Are you guys getting that little
Boo!
Message on your phones?
No, I don't actually look at those, because why
it's like
look at
a
them?
Lot more dollars.
I don't know how that's going to affect. I don't know how that's going to affect me. I have a plan through Verizon. Uh-huh. It's not really even listed on the, this just was included with the deal.
Yeah, you
we
get
made.
Hulu and so, like ESPN Plus. Yeah. Yeah, no, we don't. We're gonna have to pay for it. My husband was like, it's going up. I think we're gonna have to cancel it. I'm like, I literally am podcasting about that. Like, we're not getting rid of Disney Plus. So that's the news. I'm not getting rid of Disney
Plus.
Well,
how much is Disney Plus by itself?
I don't really remember. I mean, it popped up. I barely read it too. It's like 20 bucks though.
It was like 10 bucks.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you get Hulu as well, and you get ESPN Plus, and so.
All right, yeah, that's my number one.
And you get Disney.
Well, it's worth it.
All right, Kirk, let's move on to some non-monetary news.
All right, so this is from the sources Variety, but it's all over the internet. The Mandalorian, WandaVision, and Loki are going to release on Blu-ray and 4K. What's UHD?
I just got my face in
really
that. Ultra high def.
I think it's high def. Yeah,
high def. The first season of Loki will become available on September 26. It'll feature never before seen special features. Loki is the only title whose special features have been announced. So which includes designing the TVA. That I really want to see. The production designer, Kasra Farahani, and Tom Hiddleston, and contains a look at season two. The Miss Minutes TVA orientation video. Is that the same one that they played in the show? I wonder.
Yeah.
Probably. Deleted scenes, a gag reel. Those are always great, but way too short. Always way too short. And the assembled documentary.
Cool.
I think I watched
it. I haven't seen it yet. Cool. I'm going to watch it at the end of us covering season one. I'm really interested in it. I think it's going to have some more of that art stuff. So put a pin in that. Let's discuss some of it once I've seen it.
And according to Game Rant, Blu-ray release will include a deleted scene featuring Chris Hemsworth as Frog Thor, God of Thunder's amphibian variant, which was a big twist in the comics for a while. And they did pay tribute to him in, was it Ragnar? Where was it that we saw the frog? It was in the jar. No, that was in Loki. That's in this season.
I don't know.
That's coming
okay,
up.
Okay, point.
Yeah, there's a, it's in the, it's in, what's the place where they, the variants get pruned
the
to?
The void at the end of time?
The void.
Where we see Croaky.
Yeah, the void at the end of time. Yeah.
Okay, well,
that's where we
I'm going to throw in a piece of news that it's about Croaky. So our Loki crocodile, he's getting his own comic. Did you know that? It's coming out in a couple weeks or something.
Did not know that. That's hilarious.
All right. So my next actual piece of news is really kind of like a non piece of news. It was going to be maybe more. So Jonathan Majors, obviously, is the actor who portrays Kang. He's in a lot of parts of the Disney franchise right now. And he did have an original court case for his domestic assault charges that date back to March of this year. They were going to have that initial court case first in August, and then that was continued to September 6th. So I thought that today we'd have a chance to say what's going on in that. However, it was continued on again. So it looks like it's going to be early October before we see them in the courtroom. I think there's some questions right now on whether or not they're going to allow media in the courtroom or not. I think they're saying no, but I think last week they were saying yes. The news articles kind of fluctuate between the prosecutor saying we're ready to go, we've got him, and the defense saying that, well, that the victim also may have aggressive and physical towards Jonathan Major as well. So I think it's going to be a pretty messy court case, but we really won't have any more about it until early to mid-October.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Was there any discussion in any of these articles about whether what the rationale was for the continuance?
It was like very, very much kind of bureaucracy. It was like paperwork that was submitted by the prosecution or the defense of the prosecution didn't like it. I don't know. You know, something really didn't seem.
Yeah, it's just it's a weird situation. Major's camp has spent a lot of time coming out at least in the public and the media to try and make a case that there's all this, you know, evidence that contradicts everything and disproves everything that she's saying. But the fact that the attorney general or the DA is still pressing charges and going forward with the case says that there's obviously meat on the bones.
Sure, that's a great point. I mean, obviously, we've heard for the past couple of months that people who have been in his lives, females who have been in his lives since his high school years, have also come out and said that they've had similar experiences. I don't think any of that's on trial right now when we go back into the room in October, but I hope that there's justice at the end of it, whatever that means for this franchise as well, which I think that they can adjust this franchise as needed.
Well, the wonderful thing is they can always change characters. They've been doing it for years in soap operas and whatever else. And
well, not only that, but this the character he's portraying.
There's 700 Kangs. Pick one.
Yeah, there's a variant of any. I mean, you could have a variant of him in any person you want. You know what I mean? So that.
So it's an easy way to fix.
Yeah, it is. It is an easy way to fix it. But he did a fantastic job as He Who Remains and as Kang. He was the best part of Quantumania.
Sure.
So it'll be sad if it doesn't work out. But at the same time, they shouldn't be supporting people who are treating people.
And like was that, so. It true? There were some reshoots leading up to, and I guess, you know, leading up to season two. So we don't know what those were. And it's possible that they were giving themselves some options. You know, how is the storyline going to play out if we need to change it midstream? So there's a lot of pieces moving right now.
Okay, so moving along, this is sourced from Deadline. Marvel and Disney have changed their release schedule for the TV movies twice, I guess, in the last month. This is also, you know, closely related to the strikes, or a factor of the strikes too. And as the strikes go on, obviously these are going to change again. But as of right now, to the best of our knowledge, Loki season two seems to be the only one that's sticking to its premiere date of October 6th. The second season of the animated series What If will, as of right now, debut over the holidays. It's actually expected to drop on, I believe, Christmas Day or the day after Christmas. The Hawkeye spinoff Echo seems like its place on the release schedule is tenuous. In one place, it seems that they're saying it's November 24th, but in a bunch of other places, won't be till January 24th. What I've been seeing is mostly January 2024. But who knows? I've also a lot of bad online chatter about the quality of that show. So I don't know what's going on with it. But, you know, you can't, you know, the internet's the internet, so you got to be careful. The animated series X-Men 97 will launch early next year instead of fall of this year. WandaVision spinoff Agatha Darkhold Diaries starring Katherine Hahn will premiere in 2024 leading up to Halloween. Expected to hit Disney Plus in late.
It was supposed to, but it's really pushed.
Yeah. Oh, I said that's mm-hmm. I see. That was expected originally. Yeah, that is pushed. I don't think they're even filming that.
Oh, well, then they're going to have a hard time putting it out.
It's so bananas right now. Like, for instance, they're still filming shows that we're not even hearing about. Like, is it Power Man? No, not Power Man. What's the guy?
Ironheart was one.
Well, Ironheart, I know that is, I think, is in the can, actually. Wonder Man. And they're, like, filming it, or we're filming it, and there's, like, nothing about it. It's not on the schedule. It's crazy. So, I don't know. And then Daredevil, Wonder Man, you got it right here. Daredevil, Wonder Man, and Ironheart will all have no listed release dates at this point.
Okay, what about, and I mean, I wrote the news down, so I should probably have written this down because I'm curious. What's his name? Deadpool.
I just did that. Deadpool. When's that coming out? Right now that has moved constantly as well. I believe it's 2024, but my guess is that's going to change.
Right now all the dates are up in the air.
I did read that they filmed about half of it.
I've seen some of the you know, some scenes from that, and it's going to relate, like, really heavily to everything we talk about.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very much about variants and alternate timelines and all of that. I mean, I think they set that up with the end of Deadpool 2 when he steals Cable's time travel device to go back and correct a bunch of stuff that happened in his past and save his girlfriend and all this stuff. And as a result, obviously, the TVA is going to have a response to that. Supposedly, the character Mobius is going to be in.
That's going to be great. I think it'd be a bad decision if they didn't put Tom in there too, because I need him in every piece of content that I watch. But they would be a great group of people.
Yeah. I just read a rumor. I don't know if it's a rumor or scuttle or whatever you want to call it, but that now that it's possible that the guy who plays Wolverine,
Hugh Jackman
will portray Wolverine until the end of the Avengers Secret Wars. And then when they reboot the whole Marvel universe using Secret Wars, which is what I think they'll do, we'll get new Captain America's, new Iron Man, new, you know, we'll get the X-Men, we'll get all that stuff. So then we'll have new actors. Okay, that's it on the news.
All right. So, Sydney, why don't you tell us how people can give us feedback?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you guys want to reach us, you can reach us on the Podcastica Facebook page or at talk@podcastica.com. And if you would, please go on your podcast platform of choice and give us 5 stars, rate, review, subscribe. We've had some really lovely feedback so far. So thank you guys.
Can they give us 6?
Give us 7. We want 7. Some people gave us 7. One person gave us a 3. That's okay. We're fine with that. But we need 7s to make up for it. One of the reviews, I don't expect anyone to go in there and read them or anything, but like it's from my son. So it was super duper cute. He's 10. So his is the one that has not one period or comma in the entire paragraph. So
I like the way he writes.
Very, very, very kind of him. So you guys go do the same.
Is he watching the show with you?
Guys, no one watches anything with me. They watch anime and I love that about them. I watch anime with them, but they are not watching things with me. So it's okay.
One other thing about feedback, when you go to podcastica.com, you can also leave voicemails as well. There is a little spot that you can read voicemails as well. So, folks, I think we covered both 1 and 2 pretty well. Next week, we're going to be covering 3 and 4. If I'm not mistaken, episode 3 is called Lamentus. And episode 4 is the Nexus event. And like you said,
Sylvie
/ Sydney said, you know, she'll make a post if you guys want to put something in the Facebook chat or, like I said, just email us some feedback. But that said, thank you guys so much for deep diving in all this. My name is Alex.
And I'm Sydney.
And I'm Kirk.
And for all time, see you next week.
Well, I forgot for all time. My bad.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.